Good morning, members. I call the meeting of the Property Tax and Local Government Finance Committee to order. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the January 18th meeting. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I will move approval of the minutes, which I did just read, for January 18.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, any additions or corrections to the minutes as presented? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from the January 18th, 2017 meeting of this committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The minutes are adopted as presented. Our first bill on the agenda is Representative Metza and House File 342. Representative Metza, what happened to you? Wait, did you kept it out of the ditch this morning, did you not?
I did, Mr.
Chair.
Chair,
I think it's just sympathy. He's just going for sympathy.
Oh, actually, if you listen to the record from yesterday, Representative Garofalo claimed that we were in a skirmish, and he beat me up, so it shows how hard I fight for my district, Mr. Chair.
It's always good to see in front of your constituents, Representative Metza. Representative Metza, welcome to the committee, and please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 342 is essentially a bill that's coming back that most of us probably voted on last year. It was in our tax bill. It's a pretty simple bill trying to bring a little fairness to some of the townships or unorganized groups. I guess I can't call them townships, really. The unorganized units that are either adjacent or abutting the mines. And essentially we have some wastewater treatment projects and some other things that those communities are looking to try to put together. And this simply shifts a little bit of the revenue from our local property taxes around and allows them to access a little more funding so they can complete projects like that.
Thank you, Representative Metza. And we have with you today, Representative Metza, we have Mr. And I met him earlier.
My name is Ted Luoma.
Could you spell that, please?
L-U-O-M-A.
Mr. Luoma. Say it again.
Luoma.
Luoma. Mr. Luoma, welcome to the committee, and thank you for coming down from the range, actually yesterday, it sounds. Yes. Please proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, I am testifying in support of House File 342. I live in unorganized Township 6018 on Sand Lake, which is in Britt, Minnesota. We're about 10 miles north of Mount Iron, and we're about 15 miles south of Cook in St. Louis County. I've been a resident of Sand Lake for about 37 years. I'm a past board member of the Sand Lake Association. I'm a current member of the Community Sewer Committee, where we're exploring a community sewer. I'm active in our weed harvesting program. The U.S. Steel Mintac plant is about a mile from Sand Lake, the tailings pond part of it. You can clearly see the Mintac plant from parts of the lake. Some of the cabin owners have an actual view of Mintac. We hear the plant running 24 hours a day. We hear the blasting at noon hour every day. It's sort of like like the church bells ringing up there. Every noon they blast on weekdays. We could certainly use, with our projects, we could certainly use money. We're spending a lot of time just begging at this point. Some examples of what we're doing, we are currently running a community sewer system committee. We're looking into forming a community sewer system. The current regulations up there, the newest state regulations, make it very challenging to create individual septic systems, especially on the lake, small lot sizes, and so on. Many people now are having to resort to holding tanks. So our goal is to get our community sewer system to, you know, obviously improve many different things. 52% of the current systems are now non-compliant. So And I guess, as it turns out, statewide, that isn't uncommon around lakes. So I think many, you know, in our case, we believe that the lake is being polluted for one thing. We've completed a community assessment report, which was done by an engineering firm, and now we are moving to form a sanitary sewer district. The next step for us is to start looking for funding. The other example I can give you is we have been operating a weed harvesting program. We own a weed harvester and all the related equipment so that we harvest the weeds, we haul them away, and we do all of our own maintenance. This whole project was done completely with contributions from property owners, private contributions, and we're running it completely with volunteers. In other words, the only money we spend is on fuel and maintenance. So it's been very successful. I might add that last summer, St. Louis County gave us a little bit of money because they were so impressed. They have a special fund. They were so impressed what we'd accomplished with volunteers. In conclusion, we have the largest taconite plant as our neighbor, the largest taconite plant in America as our neighbor. We are currently left out of the production tax equation and any other forms of taxation. It seems to me that it's only fair that we could get a small piece of that pie. We have other projects, other possibilities also in our township, but I just gave two examples of a project we have going now. Obviously, we could use funding. Right now, for example, we send out a mailer. We're paying for it. I mean, we have no money. So we're kind of, it costs us $350 to send out a mailer, and we're basically paying for it ourselves. So we could use operating funds. Thank you very much for your consideration. If anybody has any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Loma. Members, any questions for Mr. Loma or Representative Mensah? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for coming down and your bill. A little bit of maybe education, or for me anyway, as I understand these unorganized territories are administered by the county, but could you refresh us and tell us how that happens? Were they townships at one time, or how does that happen that they are unorganized?
Mr. Luma? Representative Mensah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can take a stab at it. I know that historically some townships, if they do not want to maintain roads or things like that, can become unorganized and let the county take over that work, similar to if you had a county road going through one of your towns that the town had given up, you know, the maintenance on so that you could share that cost because it was a thoroughfare for your district. Might be a similar example. Essentially, what we have here, though, is, you know, these townships, I don't think were organized at any point, to my recollection or knowledge. So I could definitely check into that, though, and get back to the committee with that information.
Thank you. Mr. Klayman, can you give us a little insight on this? So these townships, are they, so with the bill, they switch over from property tax to the taconite tax with the bill? Is that how it operates?
Mr. Chair, I guess just to clarify maybe two issues. With regard to the townships versus town issue, the main difference would be that a town would have a governing body, whereas an unorganized territory would not have a governing body. And so in this bill, actually, you see that that St. Louis County and Itasca counties can hold those funds for infrastructure projects in the unorganized territories because there's no governing body of the unorganized territory to actually provide those funds to. As far as the property tax component of this goes, I believe that under this bill, it's just a distribution from the production tax that these unorganized territories would then be eligible for, and it wouldn't change any way that the property tax that's levied on you know, non-mining company property would operate in that, that location. So it's just adding them to the allocation.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Okay. Hearing none, Representative Metz, any final closing words of wisdom for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't pick a fight with Representative Garofalo.
All right. Thank you, Representative Metzak. Thank you, Mr. Luoma. And have a safe travel back north.
Thank you.
With that, members, the chair, but we didn't have a motion for the bill. We need to do that. Representative Whaling moves that House File 248 be laid over for possible inclusion. And at this point, she actually renews that motion that House File 248 be laid over for possible inclusion.
No, with Mr. Chair, wrong bill. 342.
Oh, I am sorry. Thank you. actually, Representative Whalen moves House File 342, and thank you, Ms.
Representative. You're welcome, Mr. Chair. Glad we got the right bill number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The chair almost went in the ditch. And with that, House File 342, she renews that motion, and it is laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Green, is Representative Green here?
Representative Chair, Green, I'll move House File 248.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson moves House File 248. To be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. And we do have an A1 amendment. Representative Green, I was really in a hurry to get to your bill.
Good.
And welcome to the committee. Representative Green, would you like to quickly introduce your bill and then we'll go to the A1 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. The bill is really very simple. It does two things, actually. It provides an avenue for people who have been overcharged on their property tax values, and it also gives the county an option to pay that back with credits over a period of years if need be.
Thank you. Representative Lunan, would you care to move the A1 amendment?
So moved.
Representative Lunan moves adoption of the A1 amendment. Representative Green, any discussion on the A1?
The A1 amendment is some language that was given back to me by research to try to clarify some of the language that was already in the bill. It just kind of cleans up the language and makes things a little more clear as to credited, what credited means, property versus parcel. And it's pretty simple if you read it.
Okay, questions on the A1, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment to House File 248, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion passes. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Green, do you have any testifiers for your bill?
Mr. Chair, I do not. I did have some people that wanted to come and testify for it, but they were a little bit afraid of the weather. And so I told them I think we can move it. It's pretty self-explanatory. In a nutshell, if you've been overvalued and overcharged on your property taxes and you go through the proper procedure of determining that you have been overvalued and it's found in your favor, this gives an opportunity for the county to say, okay, if the amount that you've been over-assessed is over 25% of your current property tax values, then you can get a 25% credit on your preceding property tax values until it's paid up over the years.
Thank you. Representative Nelson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I'm listening to this and I was reading this before the meeting started, I guess the question I have, my understanding is the property taxes that are charged in the year are kind of like 2 years behind what the value of the property is.
Yeah.
So what we're talking here is property's gone down in value or just that historically it's been overvalued, because I'm thinking of there's a lot of households that when the real estate market crashed and the big foreclosure that happened in the metro area that I know my mother always talked about the property across the street from her that sold for $200,000, but at the height of the real estate bubble, and now it's only worth about $130,000, $140,000. And so, is it, are we talking about that type of a property, or are we talking about property that historically, for whatever reason, has been overvalued?
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, we are talking about the property that has been valued by the assessor and has been determined to be an egregious assessment. I could have spelled all that you have there, but I think that if you read the bill, you don't just automatically get a refund if let's say your property value goes down. You don't go back. This has to go through the proper proceeding. It goes through the property tax court or an abatement process. So those things I would think would be worked out. And to try to spell all those out in the bill, I think would have been confusing when I don't really think it's necessary. That's not the intent of the bill.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Nelson.
The other question I have, I guess in the way my mind works, but what happens about a property that for years has been undervalued for whatever reason, that and now they find that the property owner has made lots of improvements that weren't reported, different things, and it really is worth a lot more. What about that property? Is there a way to go back and capture that back as opposed to, you know, just on the other side of the scale, you know, somebody that's property is way undervalued and it's really worth a lot more? Or are we just looking at trying to go at the people that have been hit with, for whatever reason, over-assessments?
I don't know if Representative Green wants to answer it, but I think, and we did hear this bill last year, I think I'll let Representative Green maybe represent that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Nelson, if you want to bring that bill forward, be my guest. But I will tell you that every year the assessors go out, and certain years they assess different styles of property in my area. I don't know what they do in yours. Everything is different. But for the most part, I think they're pretty much up to date as far as what's if the property has been changed. I know that when I built my home, they took pictures of it every year because I built it as I could afford it. It took me some time. And so every year my property value was assessed up. And so I think they have that. If that is the case and some are undervalued, then the complaints within the county, I think, should take care of that. But like I say, this bill deals with the overvaluation.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't on the committee last year, so I didn't see this bill. That's
good question, though. Mm-hmm. Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green, for bringing this forward. I know counties handle this situation and grievance from property owners in different manners. In my own circumstance, I've applied for abatements or disputed a tax in Hennepin County, and they just went ahead and applied it to the next payment so I could pay less money on the next payment. And I'm reading the bill. I was just wondering here if you could clarify. It says the assessor shall determine the total accumulated amount of taxes paid for the prior 3 years on the property and subtract that amount from taxes due. Is that a limitation on the clawback of 3 years, or can someone go back 5 years or 7 years and determine that they were grossly overassessed and then only have the previous 3 years apply as far as a credit? I just wondered if there is a limitation on how far back you go.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hurtas, yes, that is a limitation, and I put that in for a couple of reasons. And one, the first reason is I think that property owners do have a responsibility to be checking their cards and making sure that they've been assessed properly and then going through the process to fix that. The reason I went 3 years is because you don't always get it done in 1 year.
Right.
And it takes some time to get through this process, and you might be 3 years before you get through the process. Another, before the question comes up, the other issue is this bill has been around for more than 1 year. I had this a couple years ago as well, trying to get the language right, and I would like to believe that the counties and the assessors have gotten their act together in the last 3 years, and we probably won't have too much of a problem. But this has been a problem in the past in my district, and it's been a real problem, and that's why I brought the bill forward.
Other questions, Representative Hurtas? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I was a little curious about the three-year look-back, too, because every year with tax statements, people have an opportunity to go in and talk to assessors and get their property reevaluated. So there is some personal responsibility in doing that, and I'm a little worried when we set the property tax values at the city, you're looking at the year previous for the year ahead when you're setting your values. So if you're going back 3 years, that can have a substantial effect on a city's budget, but also on other taxing jurisdictions like school districts and counties. So just wondering why the 3 years when there's an opportunity every year to address an overvalued property.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. And that's what I was just saying. The reason for the 3 years is that we don't get cut off. If let's say that I I know this from not personal experience, but from looking at the records in my own district, where you could go and you could file a complaint. It may take you 2 or 3 years to get your complaint through the courts. So you could be looking at a 3 years back before you even get your corrections in place. And that was the idea of the 3 years. And not more than 3 years, because like I said, just like you said, you do have a responsibility to keep track of your own taxes.
And with that, Representative Green, remind me exactly how this works. I did learn from a meeting we had up in your district a year or two ago. Citizens do have the right to review the assessor cards. And that's the card that the assessor has that's got their assessment calculations and so forth on it from their past efforts. Representative Green?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's right. It's called a field card. And you can and actually you not only have the right to view those, there's a Board of Equalization every year in the townships where you can go in and look at those, look at your valuations and talk to the assessor, both the assessor that did your property and the county assessor. So, and if you don't do it there, you can go to the courthouse. So there are avenues for you to check on that all the time, and it is your responsibility to do that.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I maybe this is too big of an ask. If anybody in the audience, I'm just curious, you mentioned the courts, Representative Green. What is the percentage of cases like this that actually go to the courts? I mean, I've had constituents that have gone to the assessor and gone through the evaluation period and had things changed that year. So it just seems like a pretty big bill with a large three-year clawback for maybe a few cases that actually go to the courts. I didn't know if there was anybody in the audience from the county assessors or counties or League of Minnesota Cities that could maybe shed some light on that.
Representative Green, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know if it was a question or if she was asking someone else. Maybe. But, you know, I think that, Mr. Chair, that's what we've been discussing here is that, yes, they are few. And so the fiscal impact would probably not be as great as people are thinking here, but those who have been over-assessed and who are having trouble getting that corrected need to have an avenue to get that corrected. It would be the same as if you went and had your car repaired and you paid for it and left, and then you went back and said, hey, they didn't do this. And you went back to the car dealer and said, well, you overcharged me. And he said, well, that's too bad. That would affect my bottom line if I give you your money back. You wouldn't accept that. I mean, this is something that I think people deserve, those that are out there, and I think they are few, but they are still people and who have been overcharged.
Mr. Klayman, any context you can provide on that, or Mr. Hines? No, probably not. Representative Joaquin, you good?
No, I'll take the question offline. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Green, Representative Green, just a quick question. Does this include all classifications of property? I don't see any definition here for residential, commercial, or agricultural. So my question is, does this include all classifications?
Mr. Hines or Mr. Klayman? Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, yeah, this would be for all classification types, and if you look at the Minnesota Department of Revenue estimate. It does provide it does provide some numbers for state general levy, general fund, as a result of the CI, the state general tax.
Representative Frank,
I'm reading that right.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green. I think this is a good, you know, consumer protection bill. As the discussion's been going on, I think it's important to remember that we're not talking about comparing property values from year to year, as we are in an appellate process of disagreeing about the assessment in a specific year. And I think that's the important distinguishing factor here. Oftentimes with property, people aren't aware that they're overassessed until all of a sudden maybe they put it up for sale and they start getting appraisals, and then they look at and compare other properties, and then they become aware that they've been overassessed and certainly have that opportunity then to make that appeal. And sometimes that could be a deal breaker in terms of what the burden of property tax is, whether or not you sell your property or move your property. But if the value really is in question and the property taxes are adjusted, that would carry forward in your bill. It inures or stays with the land rather than the person who paid it. So that's an important factor, and thanks for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative, your bill has some good points. My question also goes back to that three-year look-back period. And I assume that you're thinking or saying that the value of the property has stayed pretty much the same for those 3 years, but, for example, of ag land where the values have been increasing, how can you use 1 year's valuation to go back 3 years when those valuations could be significantly different for the first 2 years?
Mr. Chair, I would like to turn that over to the research, because as I read the bill, it's my understanding that if you're going to get the other year's value, they're going to have to be assessed at that year. So you don't, if let's just say for 2017 you're overvalued, you don't automatically drop back. Those other 2 years would have to also be assessed. You just can't go back further than that. And that's, is that how it's supposed to read? Yeah.
Mr. Clemon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Representative Green. That's, in general, that's how the calculation would work. So what would happen is that the county auditor would, there would be a calculation that would be made of what the amount of tax would have been over the prior 3 years under the reduced value that comes out of a decision from the tax court or from a local board. And then that would be compared to the amount of tax that was actually paid on the property. And if that, if the difference between those two numbers, if it's positive, right, so if it's not negative, if there is, then that would be the amount of the credit that then is applied in the next taxes payable year or years, depending on how large that credit is. So in the situation you're describing, the increases, it's sort of the increases in value over the prior 3 years, those would be not factor into that calculation. So it would just be taking the reduced value as of the order on that assessment year that was challenged, and then just looking back 3 years with that value and making the calculation.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, when I was the mayor of Dilworth, we would serve as the Board of Equalization when folks would come into the city, and typically, if there was a change, it was made then for that year. So I do have a concern, as others, of going back the other 2 years, and I don't quite understand how that works, because you might have a market that maybe is diminishing rapidly. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you're here, but it actually was valued up here, but you're getting somehow credit for that. So I just really think that's problematic, because I think the ones that you're talking about that's going to go through tax court and all these are probably going to be big industry. And we had some problems with that when we'd go out, and I think it was even with some of the big beet processing plants and so forth back, there was how to even evaluate those, because it's really difficult. What's their best use and so forth, and some of those big industries. And I know that was kind of a statewide concern. So I could see possibly that happening with some big industries when they come in and reassess, and then you could go back. But for the homeowner, I just don't see going back the 3 years. It just, I don't know if it makes a lot of sense. And as Mr. Anderson, or Representative Anderson says, when you get the farmland, then you really, you know, got a whole new animal there. But one other question I had is, who provides the credit? Is it a state providing the credit, or is the county providing the credit? Who provides the credit? I mean, where do the costs come from?
Mr. Kleiman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, so this would be similar to the way that a refund for overpayment would be paid, and the amount of tax that is then charged to that taxpayer for the next or for the succeeding taxes payable year or years, that would be reduced by a proportionate amount to each separate taxing jurisdiction. So they would have that information, and they could determine what their levy would be with reference to those refunds they're expected to pay in the next taxes payable year.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So it would come disproportionately out of county, city, school, whatever that might be. Representative Green, if you have a big industry that wins the fight in court, I don't know what state law is right now on that. If they appeal, and I know there are some big ones, I don't know if someone can talk about those. I don't know, Mr. Hines, I know we worked on that a few years ago. What happens, or what did happen with some of these big industries that they came back and changed the value on? Was that just from that point moving forward, or was there also some clawback time on some of those?
Mr. Hines.
Because that's where I see the big concern that could affect the counties and some of their revenues at this point.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, the way my understanding is that each year you really only challenge the current, if you go to tax court, you're challenging 1 year's worth. Now, the courts can sort of accumulate those cases over a number of years if you file and sort of make a decision that affects multiple years, but I think you have to challenge each one individually. But at the time the decision is made that refund needs to be paid immediately, I think there is some possibility that if the taxpayer agrees to take it over time, they can. But I think legally the county is obligated to pay it back once that decision is made, regardless of the size of the decision.
Thank you.
Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair, so a question then. If you're going back 3 years, does that mean you would pay those increased taxes over 3 years based on that value? So it could be 3 years of payback. Am I understanding that correctly? Because if that's correct, you could have a big industry in a very small rural city that if they won this court case, granted moving forward, but if it went back 2 or 3 years, that could be devastating. I've got cities where you've got commercial, industrial, that in some of these small cities, a very big percent, a grain elevator or whatever that might be, you know, two-thirds of the city. And so I'm just, how does that work exactly? I mean, I'm concerned about that.
Mr. Kleiman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt. So the way that the refunding scheme is under this bill is that you would look at the size of the total amount of tax credit that has accumulated over the past 3 years, and then you would compare the total amount of that 3 year credit value to what the next taxes payable year, or what percentage that is of the percentage of tax due on that property for the next taxes payable year. If that percentage is over 25%, then that refund under the bill would be paid out in 25% of each succeeding taxes payable years until that credit's paid in full. But if the total amount of that credit is 25% or less, then it would be paid in the next taxes payable year. So it allows the county to sort of ease into paying back the refund if it's a large refund under the bill.
Mr. Marquardt, thank you very much. And just one final comment. So I'm not opposed to paying back a credit to someone who's owed for a year, but I just think going back the 3 years not only is somewhat arbitrary, because we don't know if in fact that was the value of the property and they've been overcharged 3 years, plus some of the other concerns is that every year you do have a chance to come in and appeal. I mean, there's got to be some responsibility there too. So, and then the final concern is what impact that might have on our smaller rural communities that might have one huge industry that wins a court case to the Minnesota Tax Court and could have some pretty big impacts. So I think the committee just kind of needs to think about that three-year clawback possibly on that. So,
thank you. Mr. Clement, related to this, I remember last year, the year before, if it was this bill we were talking about, does the local jurisdiction have the option of doing the refund on their own? Is this the one where they have that option? So tax court, without this law, tax court says, well, the valuation should be X. And obviously there's a need for the bill because it must not be then being applied somehow, or there's obviously not a credit. So does the local jurisdiction have the option of applying a refund or a credit, or what are their options in this thing?
Mr. Chair, so there are sort of two kind of issues there. I guess the first one is that, as Mr. Hines said, the refund that's due for the challenge to evaluation on a particular assessment year would be due when that order from the tax court or when that appeal is finalized. With the consent of the petitioner, saying the tax court petition, that can be paid over time with the consent of the petitioner. As far as, you know, the local options to adjust those valuations, there's sort of the pre-assessment year that's challenged period and then the post-assessment year period that's being challenged. So if enough time has passed, well, I guess as far as the previous assessment years, if those assessments had not been challenged, then they would be unavailable to be challenged subsequently due to statute of limitations issues in the tax court. Going forward, if enough time has passed since the time that the decision came down again from the tax court, for instance, the taxpayer may have to file another petition in the tax court for those assessment years that were left out. At a certain point in time, the taxpayer could, in a sense, sort of catch up and could just have a more informal hearing with the assessor for the current taxes payable year and settle some of those valuation issues that have come up in the prior instances of appeal on a going forward basis, if that answers your question.
Thank you. Ms. Schill has a comment.
Members, I was taking a look at the revenue estimate, and to respond to Representative Marquardt's question, if you flip on the back side of the estimate, you'll see that Department of Revenue has estimated the cost to local governments to be $2.5 million per year. And so what you see on the front of the revenue estimate is the state's impact, which, and when it is fully implemented, it would be approximately $1.1 million per year, and that's to the state general levy. But local governments is about 2.5 times that.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Representative Barr.
I'm just not sure who to direct this to, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I'm wondering, I know it sounds like we don't know a property's been overassessed until the property owner challenges it, but I'm wondering, do we have any estimates on what percent of properties are overassessed, if that makes sense?
I'm guessing the answer is no, but Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barr, no, there's no data that I'm aware of that goes back and looks at, say, tax court decisions or local board or county board decisions to see there are equalizations that happen on a frequent basis, which could maybe shed a little bit of light on that, but that's all I'm aware of.
Representative Barr?
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I know there's these comments about the look-back period, and so, you know, I'm just thinking that there's probably a percent of properties that never challenge it and that somehow it comes out in the wash, with the exception perhaps of a very large commercial property. So do we know, typically, is it homeowners that are coming forward, or is it typically large commercial properties, or do we have a sense of who actually would be benefiting from this?
Representative Green, what's your experience been?
Mr. Chair and Representative, in my area, I have no less than five property owners who have come with complaints about their property tax assessment. And in certain cases, they have gone through the process and still had problems getting their refunds. The purpose of this bill can work two ways. If you're concerned about going back, right now I think you can go back as far as you want and assess. This puts a limit on it. You can only go back 3 years, which is a protection for the state. I am confused about the comment that we don't know how many challenges will be out there when we have an estimate of what they think it's going to cost us if this goes through. But if these numbers are correct, what that tells me is that we've overcharged our citizens by that much money. And then we go back to, is it our job to say, well, paying this bill is just too burdensome for us, so we don't want to correct this, we'll just let it go the way it is. Don't think that's responsible, and I think this needs to be corrected. So I brought this forward.
Thank you. Representative Barr?
No more questions.
I'm wondering, to that question about the $2.5 million estimate for local, is the department here?
Yes. You're here.
I wonder if they could comment on the fiscal, on that estimate and the, I'm getting a kind of wondering look from the gentleman.
Mr. Chair, my name is John Kloxine.
Welcome, Mr. Kloxine.
I'm the Assistant Director in the Property Tax Division. I did not prepare the revenue estimate that was done by Eric Ouellette and the people in research. However, what we did we performed an analysis of how many State Board of Equalization orders we had, how many local board decisions we had, how many county board decisions we had, and then kind of ran the numbers that way.
Mr. Kloxine, could you kind of organize those calculations and maybe share them with the committee and the author?
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Kloxine?
Just a comment.
Thank you. Representative Hurtas, to this point.
Yeah, well, I think I just wanted to make a comment that with regard to this bill, it's kind of like the tail chasing the wag. I can't imagine that anything other than the most egregious examples would come forward. Why would anybody spend $500 to chase $500 or $1,000 to chase $1,000? You know, so I think it really would be the most egregious cases if they needed representation. Some people may try and pursue it themselves individually and not figure their time as cost, but, you know, like most things, you don't litigate things if you're not going to really gain anything. So I think it kind of closes the door on the small claims.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair. Just two quick clarifying questions. Maybe I'm not sure if this is for staff, but one is, just so I'm understanding, and it was probably said, and I just haven't had enough coffee this morning, when you're going look back 3 years, do you have to prove each year that it was overvalued? Or once you prove that it was overvalued this last year, you get the 3 years back regardless?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquim, it's the latter, so it would just be taking the reduced value as it comes from whichever appeals process the taxpayer is using and applying that value over the prior taxes payable years and then calculating what the tax would have been under the reduced value. So you don't have to prove in the prior 3 years under the bill that there was an overvaluation. It just sort of assumes that the reduced value is... Well, just
okay.
That's all the calculations.
That's what I was a little concerned about that, because what happens if 3 years prior you just did a big improvement project on your house, mm-hmm. So now you're not going to capture that value because you're basing it on a market dip, and you're automatically getting that price for that last year over the last 3 years, even though you might have made a large improvement on your home. And I understand that this, from what I'm hearing, this might not be a ton of properties, but it just makes it, if you look in the back of the Department of Revenue's memo, it really decreases transparency and understanding of the system and decreases equity according to our own analysis. So I was just wanted to clarify that. And the other one maybe would be for the author. The amendment that we have in front of us, I was delinquent and didn't read our stuff until about 11 o'clock last night, and the amendment wasn't posted online, so I didn't get a chance to read it and ask questions. Maybe the author can explain subdivision 4, because I'm having a little trouble tracking with that one, too.
Representative Green?
Mr. Chair, let me reread it. This, like I said, this was what came to me from research. This was their recommendations to the bill. So, and I did accept them. I did read them, but I'll do it again so I make sure you get it right.
Mr. Klayman, can you help
okay.
with that?
Okay. Well, if you want to answer it, you can, but basically what it says that if there's a reevaluation and the property is sold, the reevaluation stays with the property. So if you're getting your credit back over a certain amount of years, the person who sold the property is not going to get a payment for it. It's going to stay with the property. Is that correct?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green and Representative Joachim. Yes, that's correct. So without that clarification, there may be an ambiguity in the bill as to whether the credit is sort of anchored to the taxpayer or whether the credit is anchored to the property. And so, you know, to resolve that ambiguity, I mean, one way or another, that would have to be. And one other sort of more general point really quick, if I could, Mr. Chair, Representative, just to sort of clarify on the an issue of when a taxpayer challenges their current year's assessment for their taxes payable year with, say, a local board, that tax has not yet been paid, so the tax for those would be applicable in the year following the year that assessment was challenged. But
thank you. Representative Joachim, follow up.
Well, I think this just kind of, that answer kind of shows how complicated this is, because I understand that the valuation should stay with the property, but here we're talking about wanting to give, Representative Green is wanting to give money back that people have paid. Now a person that's purchasing the house, from what I understand, would get the credit on that property, and they hadn't even paid those taxes yet. Is that the case with Subdivision 4?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what this does, and I think the reason they put it in there was to simplify it, and when you're selling your house and you're putting your purchase agreement in, if you are wise and have a lawyer to do that, that will be reflected in the cost of your house. So it will go to the property, the person who paid it. It'll just be in the form of in the purchase agreement if you put it together right. To try to do it the other way would be much more complicated, I'm sure.
Thank you. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair. Just looking to counsel to make sure, is that pretty accurate?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, yes, that's correct. So
the valuation stays with the property, and the credit paying back will go to the new owners and not the owner that made the payment to begin with. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Klayman, so is there anything compelling the assessor, so that the tax court does its thing and says in these past 3 years, these are the valuations over those years? Is there anything compelling the assessor going forward to making that stick going forward, that assessment, or that assessment trajectory, if you will?
Mr. Chair, that's an interesting question. It sort of depends on the nature of the, let's say, if there's a tax court order or even a Supreme Court decision. If they lay down a new rule of law regarding an appraisal methodology that's not acceptable in this state, going forward, then assessors wouldn't use that methodology, and you might see if that's what caused the reduction in value, then that would be, then assessors would apply that the following year. Aside from that, we're really getting into local assessment decisions at the local level, so there's no real, at least as I have looked at some of the statutes, there's no mandatory requirement that, you know, what happened in one assessment year based on an appeal, that has to be reflected in the next assessment year, although if it's if it's a successful appeal, there may be some administrative reasons for an assessor to make that adjustment when they assess that property going forward.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kleeman made a good point. I was just thinking about that, thinking back to my days on the town board. In the Board of Equalization, folks would come in, I think, a lot of times to protest their tax bill when really that board was simply to worry about the assessment, not the actual tax bill. And in your point that when those assessments were all cleared up and made right or made fair, they'd go on to the county board. The county board would then set the levy, and the taxes would be paid the following year. So you were talking, Mr. Chair, about the way the current system works. At least with the county boards of assessment, they were dealing just with assessment, not with a tax bill, because that's going to be paid the following year. And just a point of clarification there.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question may be for the bill author or research staff. Just for my own clarification, I had thought, and I feel like I'm hearing some conflicting information about how far back we can go. And I thought I had heard counsel say that there's a statute of limitations with the tax court. But then, Representative Green, you had said this three-year clawback is to prevent cases from going back even further. So that would that just be a difference between a Board of Equalization and the tax court?
Mr. Klayman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, I think maybe the issue here is that the statute of limitations for the tax court is that you have until the end of April in the assessment year following the assessment year that you're challenging. And so from that time period, then the tax court has a certain length of time when it has to hear the case and make a decision. So there could be a lag that exists from the time that that assessment comes out in the first part of the assessment year to when the tax court actually makes the evaluation determination.
Thank you, Mr. Klayman. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I always try and think of the unanticipated consequence just so. And I'm thinking of how we've had economic disasters happen in rural communities recently where you have one major company that's the major employer, the major taxpayer, maybe even beyond that town to the region. And I can think of one circumstance where it was a major fire and it just wasn't cost effective for that business to recreate itself. And so you have mass unemployment of the people dependent upon that on jobs, people having to move out of the area to potentially to secure employment. So you have, you know, a flood of houses on the market, or it could be, you know, a multinational state company decides to close down the plant in Minnesota for whatever reason and consolidate it with one in another state. And so you have an economic disaster that happens in a smaller community, which really affects not just the tax base, but the loss of that major employer, but also the housing values and other values in that community. And then being able to go back 3 years, it seems like you could create a death spiral for that, for the local government, you know, trying to survive some economic storms while they're trying to recruit in new employers or you know, kind of recover. And so, I mean, I don't think that's the intent of Representative Green's bill. It's to deal with individual one-off people who feel like they've been treated unfairly in the assessment process. But I think we really need to think about how would we help a small community weather a pretty large storm, and I wonder if Representative Green has thought about that.
Well, Representative Loeffler, Representative Marquardt covered that real estate pretty good earlier, good points. Representative Green?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is not going to affect that, because for that to happen, every one of those homeowners would have to go to tax court and be or an abatement process, and then find that the assessment that was given was an error. And in the case that you're putting forward, there would not be an error, there would be a change. And it's completely different than having an error being made. And it specifically says error. And I will clarify that to Representative Lean's point, The three-year look-back was not to prevent people from going back further. I said that was probably a benefit added to it. The three-year look-back was just basically to say sometimes it takes that long to get through these cases. And sometimes they're settled immediately, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're challenged. And so there's the three-year look-back was to help that and to protect the counties from going back further.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking of it, the value of the homes as well, because, you know, the sales will demonstrate that they clearly have a different value after the economy has changed. But I think we're all doing a good job of trying to think through how this would really work in a practical way. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Representative Joachim, and then, members, we do have some more testifiers, and hopefully we'll close this one up. Representative Joachim.
I promise, Chair, I'll be quick. Just a quick clarification so I understand. Representative Green just mentioned the homeowner having to go through tax court, but on 107 and 1.7 and 1.8, that's just one of the avenues. There's other avenues. Owner wouldn't have to go to the tax court to have this bill take effect. It could be through the Board of Equalization or a County Board Appeal process. I just wanted to make sure people understood that.
Thank you. Mr. Baker, are you, we should have maybe brought you up earlier, Mr. Baker. Did we cover your testimony for you, Mr. Baker? Welcome, sir. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Stephen Baker. I'm the assessor for Ramsey County, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. The testimony was interesting. I don't know that it covered. I think it illustrates what I was thinking about this bill is it creates so many concerns on so many levels, it's really almost impossible to come up with all of them mentally. I don't know that I can stress any more how concerning this bill is to Minnesota assessors. It's akin to really taking blocks right out of the foundation of the system that we have and leaving those holes in the foundation there permanently. So I understand the concerns for people to be treated fairly and for people to have an opportunity to have their taxes adjusted. I guess based on just a couple of the discussions that have come up. So let's take, I wasn't going to start with some scenarios, but based on the discussion, I think maybe that's a place to start. Does that seem appropriate, Mr. Chair?
It does. Thank you.
All right. So there's been quite a bit of conversation around tax court. A tax court, there is a filing deadline prior to May 1st of the tax year. You have to file in tax court. You can file in small claims if you're residential or if you're commercial. You have to file in regular division. Those cases do tend to take a while to get resolved, and some years will stack up. The court requires an appraisal for each year. As assessors require an appraisal for each value year that we place an assessment on a property, and that appraisal should include all influences on market value, so changes to the property, changes in land, changes to the neighborhood, changes at the city level, changes just in market direction. So we just came out of the Great Recession. So let's take our commercial properties, which, you know, many people said dropped, 50% after Shearson Lehman. So if we had a tax petition, which many properties filed then, and those values got reduced in 2009 or 2010 to that post-recession value, this bill would take their pre-recession value down to that level as well. So we could potentially have a value reducing to 50% if the recession impact was 50% and the court gets that right. We could then be reducing a value prior to the recession by that same 50%, assuming that the recession happened 2 years earlier. Very difficult to figure out how this could work.
But, Mr. Baker, wouldn't the court take that into consideration as deliberation? Mr. Baker.
The courts, what they'll typically say is they kind of put blinders on in a case and they just look at the information in front of them and they only look at the value year in question. And I've been involved in cases where say, a petitioner or an attorney tried to introduce evidence around a property tax settlement, you know, or another decision, and the courts would say, no, that's not part of this case. So I would say they would not be influenced, at least not legally. If they're going to be emotionally influenced by it, it's hard to say. I think generally judges try to set that part aside and when they put on their robes and just look at the law. So I don't know that would be the case. So that's a concern on the commercial side. And then let's say that there's petitions in these different years, and a petition for 1 year gets resolved, say, in 2016, and now in 2018 they resolve a petition for the 2 years after. Does that go back and change the year that was already decided by the court? It could, I think, under this law. On the residential, there's quite a bit of conversation around who appeals. So tax court is primarily commercial, industrial, and apartment properties. Local boards and county boards are primarily residential. In Ramsey County, we have about 150,000 properties. We generally have between 500 and maybe 1,200 appeals. We don't have local boards because we're a true county system. So all our appeals are either informal appeals or they're county board appeals. Last year, I think we managed around 500. We had no one come to the county board. Our staff resolved all the concerns of every taxpayer administratively. With this law, they are disincented to agree to a value with my appraisers because they don't get the additional 2 years reductions. They have to come to the county board. So we're going to push a lot of our appeals from informal appeals that just is a conversation with the owners. We go out and inspect the property and talk to them. They're going to have to go to the county board of appeal and equalization to get the extra 2 years. So I'm concerned that that's going to destabilize that process as well. I personally think the revenue estimate is low. Certainly in some years, I think it's going to be very low. You know, the case around the question around large decisions in a small jurisdiction. So let's take a state assessed case. You know, Clearwater County, I think, has close to half their tax base in the pipelines. There's state assessed cases that are being heard on those. So if those decisions go back an additional 2 years, that could be significant. But I don't want us to get too caught up in those instances. You know, I think really what we should look at in Minnesota is what creates and perpetuates a really stable, valid, fair property tax system. And the best system that we've been able to derive through the years is to base that on market value and to do our best to get to a true market value every year. And to start to say that we're going to base taxes in some years on some properties on values that do not pass that test or do not have to pass that test, my feeling is that's a mistake. And would be a big step backwards for Minnesota. We do have some significant concerns, I guess, on the administrative side. You know, I think the role of the auditor and the duties of the auditors in this statute are going to be significant, calculating the credits going forward and keeping track of those and where does that fit. Our current systems aren't going to do that. So either we have to do that offline separately or we're going to have to reprogram all the computer systems in Minnesota to accomplish this. There was some discussion around the transparency of our data for assessment data. Most jurisdictions now, beyond just making the field cards available to taxpayers when they request it, we put the data on our websites. And generally now, you know, we're moving to a point where you can see photos. Some counties have sketches. We don't have our sketches out there yet. I'd like to get there. I think that's coming. So you can see maybe the sketch of the property. You can see the basic data that the assessor is using to value it. Is that correct or incorrect? But, you know, I think that Minnesota has really come. I've been in the business about 27 years, and I think we've moved a long ways in terms of customer service and treating our taxpayers as fairly as we can and more fairly through the years. Can we do better? Always. I think we can always strive to do better. But this kind of presupposes that you know, a mistake in the current year was a mistake in an earlier year. And I just don't, I don't really feel that that's oftentimes true. We look at the local board or the county board as kind of that final inspection. You know, you get a pair of pants and it's got the inspections number in the pocket. That's kind of what our value notice is about, right? We send that out and say, please take a look at this. Here's all your options. Here's your rights. If we're wrong, call us. And we want to have those conversations. And if we're wrong, we'll adjust the value. But now with this, if we adjust the value, we maybe have to, we're also looking at adjusting the value for the two previous years as well as an incidental activity. So I just hope the committee can think about those items. You know, I do think that this destabilizes our system. There was one question about who pays the refunds. The answer is really the other taxpayers. So it's the taxpayers who are living with the system as it works are not appealing or are appealing each year and keeping their assessment correct, and then they're going to pay the tax refund to the folks that are just coming in every 3 years. So I thank you for your time, and I'd certainly answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baker, how would you solve this dilemma that Representative Green has brought us? He said that there are 5 property owners who are still waiting for refunds. So how does this get solved?
Mr. Baker.
From your point of view.
I'm sorry. That's a great question. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for reminding me of that. So let's, you know, take the tax court. If there's a if there's not going to be a refund from a local board or a county board, because that's resolving the assessment question in the current year before it's used to levy taxes, right? Which is the best way. It, nobody has to wait for their money back. The jurisdictions don't lose anything. And it creates a pattern where people have an annual, hopefully not annual, but there could be annual conversation with us around what's the correct value. So if we come to an agreement or a meeting of the minds, then that's the value the taxes are based on if there is no refund. If there's a refund, it would typically have to be from an abatement, which is guided by each county's abatement policy. Under our statute, every county has its own, establishes its own abatement policy. So let's talk about tax court a little bit, because that's the one we've talked about the most. Tax court, there will oftentimes be some delay. So the remedy is while they're waiting for their refund on that first year is they just keep filing on the additional years until the whole issue is resolved. I would say normally there's at least 2 years petitioned in court or even 3. The extreme we've had in my jurisdiction was 8, I think. But that the delay was really on the petitioner side. And that's what we see most of the time is when values are falling, the petitioners, that the taxpayers that file petitions like to delay the resolution until they really find the bottom. They find the bottom of the market because they hope that that'll help their case in all the years. And retrospectively, I think human nature is it probably does help them. So you just keep filing, you know, each year until you feel that, okay, the assessment really, the market's improved and the assessor hasn't increased his value. I don't need to file this year, but your place is still held on all those earlier years. And we pay 4% interest. So, you know, for the last 8 or 9 years, 4% interest is actually pretty good money. We have to chase petitioners down to sign their settlement letters because they don't really want us to pay them back. As soon as we pay them back, they lose the interest and put it in a bank account that gets them, you know, 0.05 interest. So I think the issue of, I would hope that, you know, we need to look at what's the issue with the 5 citizens that we're talking about here. But I would just hope we would be cautious about passing a law that affects so dramatically and so fundamentally what we do in Minnesota just to solve a very small problem.
So, Mr. Baker, back to you mentioned, and I'm remembering this from last time. So the county has the option of whether or not to reimburse them under current law. Is that correct? Can you talk about that a little more?
No. I mean, it's under current law, if if a calculation is made that there's been an overpayment of tax for any reason, we're compelled to refund that money.
You are.
It's not discretionary in any fashion. And we're also compelled to pay interest. And so I can't. The only part of it that can be a little bit discretionary is the abatement process, like I said, because that is established at a policy at the county level. So that can feel discretionary, but really the auditor and the assessor's office are bound by that policy that the county board establishes. And in our county, the board creates a review panel that's made up of primarily citizens every 5 years, and we review our policy. And we modify it if there's suggestions, and then that is what gets adopted.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Baker. Members, we need to keep moving here. We're going to have Michelle help us with a presentation here. In addition, any quick questions, burning questions for Mr. Baker? Representative Joaquin has one.
Sorry,
Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry, Mr. Baker. I'm trying to see how this would affect the process and the values further on down. And I was thinking about one of the things assessors use is comparative values when homes are sold. Mm-hmm. And let's say you had a $200,000 home, which is pretty much the average in my city, and you won and said 25%, you were overvalued by 25%. And Representative Green mentioned, well, let's say you decide to sell the next year and it stays with the property. Representative Green said, well, if you have a good contract when you're selling the house, that'll be kind of put on the value of the home. And that's how you as an owner would recoup those taxes that you paid. Well, let's say it's put on the value of the home then, and let's say right now in Hopkins, we don't have a lot of houses being sold because people are staying, they're remodeling, and you only have 5 comps that year to look at, and all of them have that higher value. How does that end up reflecting then as you're valuing those homes further out?
Well, Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think what we're confusing here a little bit is tax and value. So the credit that is created from the backward-looking formula or scheme, I guess was the term that was used earlier, that's a tax credit. So then if that credit is more than 25% of the current year taxes, 25% gets put on each year. Now, that doesn't mean that the max loss is 25% a year, because if the cumulative deduction was, say, 160%, 25% of that would be more like, 40%, right? So the loss in revenues each year, or the loss of the tax reduction each year, could be greater than 25. But so let's say you sell in second year and there's a 4-year credit. 2 of those years of credits would be kind of in the files of the auditor. They would not be part of the tax bill, as I would understand, unless we change the tax bills or something. They wouldn't show up on our website currently because we don't really have a place to put that information. So it wouldn't be very transparent. My guess would be a lot of the transactions, it wouldn't even be known. The sellers may or may not think about it. They may tell the buyer. It's something that typically you prorate under the purchase agreements. You prorate taxes to the date of closing is the common convention, but that can be changed. And the percentage of that tax that's paid by the buyer could change. So the seller could demand terms in their purchase agreement that would give them some of that future credit back. That would be a negotiation. My concern would be more the ones where the tax bill has been brought down for 4 years and you sell in the 5th year. And an owner is going to buy that house thinking the taxes could be 40% lower than they're going to be the next year because there was this credit on there, which is very unusual and not typical, and they don't look for that. The realtors have figured that sort of thing out, and the purchase agreement has language in it now about, things like, green acres and tax deferment programs. They ask about those, but they don't ask necessarily about tax credits. They would catch up to this eventually, but there would probably be a window of time where some buyers would be surprised unpleasantly.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin, quickly.
And then their solution would be then to go to the Board of Equalization and say it's overvalued and that would process would all start again?
Well, Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative, let's assume that the value hasn't changed and that the change that was made, let's say it was made at the county board and the assessor agreed with it, and so the assessor has just continued that value forward, the taxes were only brought down because of the credit that was backward-looking. The value is not incorrect. The value is still correct. So then when it sells, it should sell for something similar to that value. It's just the surprise is not going to be that the value was wrong. The surprise is going to be that the taxes were brought down.
Thank you. Representative Green, any rebuttals and or closing comments?
You know, Mr. Chair, the only thing I'd say is when the testifier was talking about their current system and how mine was confusing, I'm thinking mine's looking pretty simple compared to what they're doing now. But bottom line, you know, I appreciate the fact that you allowed me to testify in committee. If there's things that people have problems with, we can work on them. But basically, it's a simple bill. If money is owed, it should be paid. If anybody knows that, it should be us. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, with that, thank you, Representative Green and Mr. Baker. The chair does lay over House File 248 for possible inclusion. Ms. Sheila, you have a discussion you'd like to lead with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. You have two tools that have been distributed in your packets today, one of which is the spreadsheet for taxes, tax refunds, aids, and credits, and the other is called a catalog of budget activities, tax refunds, aids, and credits. And why are these two things important? Basically, this gives you the summary of the accounts for which this committee has oversight when it comes to refunds, aids, and credits spending. And so and the purview of this committee also includes the state general levy and tangentially revenues that come in the mortgage registry and deed transfer tax. So let's start with the spreadsheet. You'll see that all the accounts are on here that actually include income and sales and use taxes and other taxes. Those are the responsibility of the overall tax committee. But it's helpful to have all the information as reference points. You'll see revenues received in the statewide property tax on page 2 of the spreadsheet, lines 43 through 47. So you can see the amounts, at least according to this is for the November 2016 forecast, and that's the economic forecast which we are operating under right now. There will be an update to all of these numbers when the February forecast comes forward. You'll see some changes, but a number of these items do not change with that forecast. The statewide property tax, you can see for the 2018-2019 biennium, revenues are coming in at about $1.7 million. And then you'll see the planning years also $1.8 billion. These numbers are all in thousands. On page 3, you'll see revenues on lines 81 and 82 for the mortgage registry and deed transfer taxes. And those are basically, why is that important? Because the agricultural preservation credit, which we'll talk about in a minute, has some of its revenues come from those sources. And then pages 4, 5, and 6 contain all of the accounts, the spending accounts, that this committee has oversight for. You'll see refunds on lines 1 through 9, local aids, including local government aid, county program aid, township aid, and the like, lines 10 through 31. Property tax credits flow onto page 5, lines 32 through 60. Taconite funds, lines 63 through 68. Local pension aids are located on lines 71 through 86. PILT payments, payment in lieu of taxes, is located on line 89. And there are other aids and one-time appropriations. This includes a council on results and some of the other appropriations on lines 91 through 98. On line 99 is the overall amount of spending. And for the fiscal 18-19 biennium, tax refunds, aids, and credits spends about $3.5 billion for the biennium. Those figures are important because as we evaluate proposals, both in bills and you know that the governor's recommendations for the 18-19 budget were released yesterday. We'll also take a look at the impact on this forecast on what is being proposed there. So everything right now as these bills come before the committee, the revenue estimates that you see are in relationship to the numbers in this spreadsheet. And if you ever have any questions on the numbers reflected in the forecast or any of the revenue estimates that come forward, please let me know. Now, if to add to some of the detail of the spreadsheet, that's why this catalog of budget activities is made available to you, because for every spending line on this spreadsheet is a thumbnail descriptor in this catalog. So, for example, everyone is interested in homeowner property tax refunds. That is on page 4, line 1. And basically, it's one of the spendier items in our overall budget. Approximately $895.2 million is forecasted to be spent through the homeowner PTR, Homestead Credit PTR, for 18-19. So the thumbnail description for the Homestead Credit State Refund Fund in the catalog is located on page 10. So you can see on page 10 that you get not only the statute reference of where the law is for this refund, but also spending dollars. It gives you a brief history, fiscal 14 through the planning years 2021. You get what has been spent, what is projected to be spent, and how that has changed over the years. And then you'll have an indication of what kind of appropriation it is. This is a statutory appropriation and open. That means that it is forecasted. We will see changes in these as the forecast becomes released. And then a brief description of the item. And so for every item on pages 4 through 6, you'll have a thumbnail description here. And if you have questions on other items that might not show up on the spreadsheet, please ask. I've also included, just for a reference point, for example, on page 27 of the catalog, you get a brief description of the fiscal disparities distribution levy. That is not a general fund item, but often we talk about fiscal disparities, and so you can see the value associated with that. And this is actually a culmination of figures from Mr. Hines' simulation runs. And also in the appendices, you have just handy information on pension aids. And then if you're interested in how this spending has changed over the last 20 years, look on page 30 and you can see 20 years of tax aids and credits spending. And so we are on a slight uptick from what historically we have had. And that's basically it. This is meant to be a helpful tool, and I will tell you, any questions that you have on taxes or tax aids and credits, my colleague Cynthia Templin is sitting in the audience over there. We both work on these issues together, and please feel free to ask us anything. Finally, we are working on the governor's recommendations that were released yesterday. I have some preliminary information, not quite ready yet for prime time, but Ms. Templin and I will be releasing a spreadsheet similar to this, but with governor's recommendations on it as well. And we're hoping to have that in the next day or two.
Thank you, Michelle. Any quick questions for Michelle? Members, bedtime reading and beyond. And Michelle, a new update with the governor's recommendations will be available in another couple weeks.
Mr. Chair and members, we're hoping to have it in the next few days, at least another spreadsheet. And then as we delve into some of the detail, when we receive language, that will be in the next couple of weeks.
Super. Thank you. Members, any final departing thoughts? With that, the meeting is adjourned.